So today we're reading from Madhya Lila, chapter 4, a series of verses, text 96 to 102, continuing the pastime of Madhavendra Puri and Gopinath, Gopal. So we'll read together 102, but I'll read from 96 onwards first. Throngs of people came from different villages to see the deity of Gopal, and they took Mahaprasadam sumptuously. When they saw the super excellent form of Lord Gopal, all their lamentation and unhappiness disappeared. All the villages in neighboring Vrajabhumi, Vrindavan, became aware of the appearance of Gopal, and all the people from these villages came to see him. Day after day, they all performed the Annakoot ceremony. In this way, not only the neighboring villages, but all the other provinces came to know of Gopal's appearance. Thus people came from all over, bringing a variety of presentations. The people of Mathura, who are very big capitalists, also brought various presentations and offered them before the deity in devotional service. Thus, countless presentations of gold, silver, garments, scented articles and eatables arrived. The store of Gopal increased daily. One very rich Kshatriya of the royal order constructed a temple. Someone made cooking utensils, and someone constructed boundary walls. And then we come to today's verse, text 102. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Each and every family residing in the land of Vrajabhumi contributed one cow. In this way, thousands of cows became the property of Gopal. Purport. This is the way to install the deity, construct the temple, and increase the property of the temple. Everyone should be enthusiastic to contribute to the construction of the temple for the deity, and everyone should also contribute food for the distribution of prasadam. The devotees should preach the gospel of devotional service and thus engage people in practical service to the deity. Wealthy people can also be attracted to take part in these activities. In this way, everyone will become spiritually inclined and the entire society will be converted to Krishna consciousness. The desire to satisfy the material senses will automatically diminish, and bhakti, devotional service to the Lord, and the senses will become so purified that they will be able to engage in bhakti, devotional service to the Lord. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. By serving the Lord, one's senses are gradually purified. The engagement of one's purified senses in the service of Lord Rishikesh is called bhakti. When the dormant propensity for bhakti is awakened, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatvatah. This is the process of giving humanity the chance to awaken Krishna consciousness. Thus people can perfect their lives in all respects. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om gyanati minandasya gyananjana shalakya chakshuramitaminatasmai shri guru. So a wonderful pastime continuing. Annakoot festival every day after the installation of Gopal. And we heard a very nice description here of how different people of different types all contributed to the service of Gopal. And it struck me when it said here the people of Mathura, who are very big capitalists, also brought various presentations. Well, I was thinking we have the capital city right on our doorstep here. So there's many, many great capitalists in that city. And yes, we see that. We see that they bring presentations for the deity until the antisocial distancing prevention began. Before that point, there was some very nice contributions by the capitalists. And so we still need those, so please keep them coming. If any capitalists are watching, please, this is how the deity is to be served. Whatever we have, whatever we have to offer the Lord, we can offer that. If you happen to be a big capitalist, you can offer presentations suitable to one's capability. Otherwise, it said here, villages in the neighboring Vrajabhumi became aware, and the people came to see him. So that's at least the first thing that can be done. We can go to see the Lord. Now, obviously, now physically going to see the Lord might be difficult, but at least we can virtually see him through broadcast, and we can actually see him in our heart and approach him in that way by actually becoming purer in devotional service. So that intention, that desire to still want to be with the Lord should never decrease. No material situation can put an impediment in someone's desire to see the Lord or to meet the Lord. There may be so many actual physical obstructions. You know, devotees are sometimes prevented from going inside the Jagannath temple in India, in so many other temples. In certain places you may not be able to travel to those places even. It may be dangerous. But still the devotee can actually attain the result of going to the temple, being physically in the presence of the deity, by actually developing a very pure consciousness. And that is the secret of devotion. People in general cannot understand how they can survive if the material situation is going against them. It's like the end of the world for them. If the oil runs out, if things stop, if life becomes difficult, it's the end of civilization, at least the end of lifestyle, end of their lifestyle that they're conditioned to. But actually, devotees know that whatever material arrangements are there, it is inevitable that they will stop. It is actually almost a guarantee that they will stop or change or modify into some other form. Now, because the devotee's consciousness is not really focused on the particular material arrangement or the particular material facility available, they're not disturbed. They're not disturbed in principle. Now, practically, there may be so many details to deal with. There may be so many difficulties that someone may experience in the material aspects of their life. But still, it will not disturb them internally. Because they know that if this arrangement is finished and another arrangement begins, it will just be a difference of external interaction. And so for a devotee, external interaction is not at the forefront. So they are not disturbed. So this means that we have to develop a very strong internal attachment to something which does not change. That's the only solution, actually. Because if everything around us changes, then the only way to remain undisturbed is by attachment to something that does not change. And that something is the process of devotional service to the person who doesn't change, Krishna. Now, Krishna can manifest in so many ways. He will manifest different forms. Each of the Vaikuntha planets is filled with a form of the Lord within which his particular devotees render devotional service. So the Lord has multiple forms. So when we say Krishna doesn't change, what we mean is that Krishna remains Krishna. He's always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's always the Lord of everything that there is. Even though that's not an aspect of his status that he particularly likes to promote. Krishna has such opulence in Dwarka, in Mathura, in so many places around the world. In some countries, in some places, he's worshipped with great opulence, great wealth, great prestige, great power, prowess. And here we're getting a little taste of the different types of contributions the Lord receives. But it said the Lord is happiest when he is running around in Vrindavan, chastised by Mother Yashoda, chastised by Nanda Maharaj, carefully protected and nourished by both of them, as if anyone can nourish the Supreme Lord anyway. He's the one who supplies nourishment to every single other person. He's happiest when he's just running there carefree, no status, no big crown, just a peacock feather in his hair. That's what Krishna prefers. So that Krishna, that nature of Krishna's, that never changes. Krishna is always the Supreme Lord, but he is always the wonderful person who engages in mellows with all his devotees. That's Krishna. He engages in mellows with each of his devotees. 5 primary rasas, 7 secondary rasas, all described in the Nectar of Devotion. And so Krishna is that constant factor in our lives, and he's always been in our lives, but we just need to recognize it. We just need to recognize it and fix that fact in our consciousness. Because it is our consciousness that fails often. It is our consciousness that does not have Krishna in it. Now, our consciousness is free to have whatever we want in it. We can't naively pretend that our consciousness is always purely spiritual. Purely spiritual. It is the essence of our heart that we are naturally full of Krishna prema. That is all true, but our consciousness isn't always full of that. Our conscious thinking capacity at this moment might not be fully aware of Krishna. Maybe at the moment it is because we're saying Krishna so many times. But at other times, if we're standing in the queue, if we're walking, Krishna consciousness might not be what's on the top of our mind. So what is our consciousness? Our consciousness could be whatever we have interest in, whatever is concerning us, whatever hankerings we have, whatever fears we have, whatever happinesses we have. Each person has all of these in abundance. And they come at different times, occupying places in our consciousness. So it is far better if all those places, all those thrones that we've made in our consciousness, for all these other temporary matters and considerations, all of those thrones are offered to Krishna, offered to aspects of service to Krishna, offered to inviting the Lord to personally come and be in our consciousness. That is the transformation that we have to undergo. And through this pastime, we actually see how the worship of the deity facilitated this for a large number of people. There was a very interesting statement here. Throngs of people came from different villages to see the deity of Gopal, and they took Mahaprasadam sumptuously. When they saw the super excellent form of Lord Gopal, all their lamentation and unhappiness disappeared. And that's very interesting. Just by seeing the form of the Lord, by being in the association of the Lord, by being in the association of the devotees, our lamentation and unhappiness disappears. So hopefully most people do feel that when they come before, they see the Lord. Everything else disappears. And that's the beauty of having the Lord's presence in our heart. Now in the Bhagavatam, there's also something very interesting. After Lord Shiva has given some instructions to the Prachetas in the 4th canto, through those instructions, they achieve darshan of Lord Vishnu. And they say something interesting to him. They say that when transcendental topics are discussed, all the members of the audience are relieved from all kinds of hankerings and distress, at least for the time being. While that discussion is taking place, while the meditation on the Lord is taking place, persons are relieved of all types of distress, at least for the time being. And then it also says, not only that, but they also forget to be envious of one another. And they do not suffer from any anxiety or fear. So all these amazing things happen just by the presence of the Lord. Now the entire Bhagavatam was written as Srila Narad Muni encouraged Vyasadeva in the early parts of Canto 1, That whole explanation is there, the whole story of the purpose of manifesting the Bhagavatam. One of the very important points made by Narad Muni to Vyasadev is that by giving people topics of Krishna to think about and pastimes of Krishna to meditate on, their material miseries, lamentation and hankering will all disappear. It's not an exercise in just conveying propaganda. You know, sometimes preachers, they may just stand in the corner, Hyde Park Corner, I remember. Preacher's Corner. Speaker's Corner, it may be called. But you normally get the odd fanatic standing there, going on about something or other, broadcasting their propaganda. That's not the only purpose of spiritual, spirit or shastra. That's not the purpose of scripture, just to broadcast a propaganda just for its own sake. I've come across this scripture, therefore I'm just going to broadcast it. No, I've always found that approach very unsatisfactory. Rather, what's being presented here is very interesting. That when one meditates on the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, captures the form of the Lord in their heart, their material hankerings, lamentation, difficulties all disappear. Now, isn't that nice? That's what people want. Now, you could say that's something material, but it's not. Because by nature, we are pleasure-seeking. So it is actually reinstating our constitutional position if we resituate ourselves in an absence of material hankering. So getting to a stage where we have no material hankerings, have no lamentation, no fear, no anxiety, that is actually a very desirable goal. And not so much that immediate result as the goal. Rather, what is more important is the achieving of a situation within which this goal almost becomes a side effect. And so for a devotee, they appreciate that devotional service to Krishna, which is actually the treasure of one's life. When they receive that treasure, when they're engaged in devotional service to Krishna, that itself is a complete consummation. It's a complete satisfaction, a completion, you could say. As it says in the Gita, the offering, the offerer, it is all, the consummation is complete. Everything is naturally situated. When we are rendering service to Krishna, we are situated again in our natural constitutional position. It's the way it's meant to be. Side effects of all of that are that we have no material hankerings, no lamentation, no disturbances. Now in the Vaikuntha planets, the name itself is Vaikuntha, no anxiety. When one renders service to Krishna, there cannot be any material anxieties. Now, service itself may involve the voluntary acceptance of anxiety for the pleasure of the Lord. How much anxiety is Mother Yashoda in? Plenty. But that anxiety is blissful. It is exquisite. It is something relishable, even if seemingly horrendous things are happening. Even if some of the pastimes are quite frightening. Even if there are forest fires. Even if cowherd boys, everyone is falling asleep, even if there are demons coming, causing them difficulty. Those anxieties serve to enhance and create a special mood within which the mood of rasa with Krishna is increased even more. So we can never look at the temporary or short-term feelings of anxiety in direct service of Krishna as real anxiety. We cannot do that. We often do that, but that's just something to be worked on. That over time, the temporary anxieties that we feel, or difficulties, we will learn to stop seeing them as difficulties. When Prabhupada was preaching all around the world, traveling around, he had unlimited anxieties. Many, many anxieties, many difficulties, many troublesome individuals to deal with. Prabhupada encountered so much difficulty with Mr. N in Mumbai. Mr. N, as he was known, caused so much difficulty to the devotees. But did Prabhupada accept it? Yes, he accepted it in his stride and became powerful, like a lion, in the pursuit of making sure that Krishna's mission carried on. That was not an anxiety that caused him to be bewildered from his path, that caused him to be disturbed or disheartened. There were so many disheartening incidents around the world. And so many times when we perform devotional service, many disheartening things may take place. But they are temporary. They are small elements of anxiety, which if we see them as just part of the process of being situated in a closer connection with Krishna, then we cannot see that anxiety and actually call it an anxiety. We can rather see it as a stepping stone which is building our strength, building our character. It is quite difficult at the time to see things that way. It is difficult. It takes a lot of concentrated thinking, concentrated effort, and also mercy from the devotees, who may sometimes remind us, don't be disturbed by this, it's insignificant. Just carry on. It's something just to be tolerated. And then naturally, after some time, we're situated in that state, where whatever the anxiety, whatever running around we have to do, whatever unconventional measures we have to adopt, just in order to serve the Lord, we just do them happily. Some people, especially when the program, their environment changes, when it changes, they lose it completely. They can't manage. People at the moment are obviously in great difficulty, cooped up in a house. Perhaps now they're allowed to exercise at least more than once a day. Relief. Freedom. Well, until that, yes, getting very difficult. And also for us, we're locked down here. We have perhaps a larger house than most people to roam around in. But we're also locked in. We're not allowed to exit. We can't go and say hello to our friends. So yes, austerity for everyone. Universal. And that's just one example. When the paradigm changes, some people can get very, very disturbed. So governments around the world are wondering just how to get back to normality. How to restart this engine of production and consuming, which has been suspended for some time. That is the major task on the hands of governments. How to get the economy going. How to get the oil consumed again. If you're aware, oil prices have been going up and down for reasons of lack of consumption and too much demand. So the task is not to save the planet by consuming less at the moment. The task for every good citizen and country is to increase the production again. Sorry, increase the consumption again. Start driving around. Even if you're just driving around for no good reason, just do it. Consume the oil. Keep the prices high. So people, when their status quo changes, the status quo of their normal life changes, and they have a new environment, a new paradigm to deal with, that causes disturbance. They can't handle it. So they try to reinstate their original situation. But for a devotee, they don't really care about the situation. As I mentioned, whatever the material situation, whatever the facility, the lack of facility, a real devotee is not particularly bothered about it. They're simply concerned with, how can I, within this situation, serve Krishna? And so their efforts, their priorities are not geared towards altering material situations. So in that sense, in that way, sometimes devotees may appear to be a little lazy materially. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Sometimes devotees may appear to be disinterested in material progress. Well, that's because they are. They will not be averse to material progress, and they will not be averse to material regress. They will be equipoised with both. So Devotees, because their focus is Krishna, they're not overly disturbed. And so they do not put their efforts into these things so much. The famous conversation, Prabhupada's initial conversation with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And Prabhupada challenged him, how can we spread this movement of Lord Chaitanya while we remain a subjugate country? Because the British were in charge of India at the time. And there was a whole liberation movement going on. And the response that came back, Prabhupada was essentially saying, we need to be independent and on our own feet before we can actually think about propagating this. And the response came back, and it was a formative response in Prabhupada's relationship with Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, that this mission of Mahaprabhu's is so important that it cannot wait for a change of Indian politics. It's not our mission to keep changing the circumstances. It's definitely the desire of a devotee that a favorable circumstance exists for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. But we do not make extensive plans for changing material situations. We consider them, we're aware of them, but we leave that to others to do. It's not that they shouldn't be done. We should always support and promote individuals who are trying to reform society for the better. That's desired. But that's not our specific job description. So sometimes people expect devotees to do all sorts of things for everyone. They look at maybe some item that a devotee doesn't do. You know, sometimes they say, this great charitable enterprise has opened hundreds of hospitals, saved hundreds of people from malnutrition. What are you people doing? Well, it's not that we have a problem with that. We support it very much through our different methods, through food distribution, through our even hospitals and whatever. But if we don't do it to the extent that others do it, because it's their job, that should not be a criticism of us, because our job is something different. Our job is to disseminate Krishna consciousness to the world. We could turn around and say, how come you're not doing that? That could be our challenge. You're wondering why we are not doing A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way up to Z, all the things that you think we should be doing. But are you doing this thing, which we are doing and you're not? That's worth considering, because Krishna consciousness, the practice, the propagation of Krishna consciousness, is actually the basis for choices that everyone in society needs to make in their life that will lead to actual success. Just whimsical activities which are carried out on the basis of established performance metrics is not the goal. We've seen where that's been going for the last hundreds of thousands of years. Increase this, increase this, increase this. It doesn't result in actual progress, upliftment, spiritual strength. But rather, if we create a culture like this, where people from the neighboring villages, they come, they bring presentations to the Lord. Capitalists from Mathura or London come, give presentations to the Lord. The devotees, as Prabhupada says in today's purport, preach. He says, where does it say? The devotees should preach the gospel of devotional service and thus engage people in practical service to the deity. So with the deity at the center of all our lives and plenty of cows being cared for, today's verse is all about cows, and people coming before the Lord, making presentations, and the devotees in general preaching to those who come, and also en masse to those who don't know they should come. If devotees do that and everyone plays their part in that way, then you actually get a society that progresses. Then you actually get something moving forward, rather than just churning the same old system, oiling the same wheels. This is a picture of a wonderful kind of scene. It's a wonderful scene of the world, where everyone is engaged in worshipping Krishna. And cows clearly are an important part of that. It said each person donated one cow, and all of these became the property of Gopal. Well, Gopal obviously means the one who protects and maintains the cows. Now, that's nice, to maintain to protect and maintain the cows. We do that. And Prabhupada, one of the main functions that Prabhupada had in mind for Bhaktivedanta Manor was to maintain cows and serve them. Maintain cows, serve them, protect them, and utilize their milk for Krishna. That's a very, very important aspect of it. We are not just pet farmers. You know, we don't keep pets. We don't just keep the cows because they're cute. I mean, some of them aren't so cute. If you're next to Govinda in a field or Kamadev in his heyday, well, you might not, cute might not come to your mind. Rather, you're keeping a safe distance so that you don't get knocked out. And then there are others. Every time a calf is born, it's very cute. Somehow this time, when this latest calf was born, the white one, I saw it just after it was born, within a few minutes. Somehow I wandered down there. And it's amazing. This little creature looks so attractive. And it's already kind of moving around and just there with the mother not moving an inch away from it. It's very attractive. So people like to see that. And so increasingly people are, even in the sort of the normal world, where they don't have access to cows, and people are increasingly going to see farms or sanctuaries. There's one place where they keep donkeys, or they used to, donkey sanctuary. So people go there. They go there for a day trip so that you can recommune with nature. Be close to an animal. So many people say that also when they come to the Goshala. Wow, this is the first time I've been next to a cow. They've never actually done that before. Never been in such close proximity to a cow. Or seen a calf. So yes, the cows are beautiful. There's something exotic. There's something unusual. And that's an indicator that the society is very, very difficult. Cows are not meant to be some exotic, rare creature. They're meant to be everywhere. You're meant to see them in every village, in every town, in every city. Carefree, protected. Not carefully constrained in certain fields, miserable, and then sent to the slaughterhouse. That's not a vision of utopia that we look for. Rather, cows should be protected everywhere. So it's not just the cuteness of cows or the cuteness of calves that's the purpose for us keeping them. We do wish to propagate a culture that Prabhupada promotes. A culture whereby every member plays its part. The humans play their part, as we've just heard. Humans of different varanas, humans of different ashrams. They all play their part in offering something to Krishna. Now it's the turn of the cows to offer something to Krishna. They're meant to offer sustenance through milk. They're meant to offer sustenance through the whole of human society, through milk, to please Krishna, through milk. Bulls are meant to provide and assist sustenance by farming, by doing the heavy physical work, which is currently replaced by tractors, tractors and other conveniences. So bulls are capable of it. So if you have a natural society which does not depend on too many artificial conveyances, you can actually have a functioning society with calves, cows, bulls, basic machinery. But we don't really have too much of a direct experience of that. So that's the difficulty for us. And so we have these as examples. So here at the manor, what we see is, you can say it's a pilot project. We have an example whereby people can first of all at least see a cow. So a rare thing. First of all, come and see the cow. They exist. Then find out what they're capable of doing. Yes, you can take milk from them. They do provide milk. It doesn't just turn up in a bottle. It comes from here. And if you want, you can try the process yourself. Then, as we did once, you can go haymaking in the fields. You can do that. You can collect the hay, store it for winter. You can do some farming. You can grow some vegetables. Yes, these items you found in Asda and Tesco, they did come from somewhere. They came from the ground. They didn't come from some artificial laboratory where they're fed nutrients. Now, that is also whole science, how you can do that. Hydroponics, it's in a whole different category of where there's no natural circumstances, but you create an artificial environment where you grow different items. And yes, you can produce things that way. So we educate people by providing a pilot project. We don't pretend this project is the project that's going to feed the country. But what we need is, we need, first of all, just to make people aware that it is possible. That it is possible to live without having a whole arrangement which is completely detached from its source. The source is here. The source is Mother Earth, nature, water, ground, soil, cow dung, manure, fertilizer. These are the raw ingredients. And yes, you can produce everything from that. So when people see that happening, the idea is that it should encourage them and inspire them to set up facilities like this en masse around the country. That is actually what is required. We need the whole milk economy to be based upon cruelty-free economy. We are not about removing economy. Rather, we want people to work out ways that they can make a profit from ahimsa milk. We need them to learn that. We don't need to create propaganda that making profit is bad. No, the entire world works upon mercantile activity. Profit, gain. That's the job of the Vaishyas. Krishi Gorakshavaniyam, Vaishya Karma Svabhavajam. That's their status in life. So if somehow through our projects, we can teach people how you can live profitably, happily, without conducting dangerous, destructive industrial enterprises, which are very dark, that is a great service that we can perform. But if we just stay here on our farm, growing three sacks of potatoes and a few liters of milk, and we're happy with that and content, and then we just look around and criticize others who have whole industries full of milk generation, production, cow maintenance, welfare, that's not actually a correct perspective on things. Our perspective is to directly develop and teach people how you can live in an alternative to what is currently provided. What is the alternative, sustaining, profitable way by which you can survive? That is required. So there isn't so much that has been done on that front so far. But there are projects. There are projects in action. Devotees are doing nice work. We need to build that. We need to build the economic infrastructure that allows that to happen. And so that's really all just based upon cows in specific today, because this is all about cows. How each person donated cows, and at the end of it, Gopal had thousands of cows. Sahasra, sahasra. Thousands and thousands of cows. That is the real wealth, land and cows. So when each person contributes something, each person contributes expertise, the Vaishyas contribute capital, the expert devotees contribute devotion, they contribute the science of devotion, they contribute training that inspires people to increase their devotion, then you actually have something that moves forward. That's very nice. And so this is part of this wonderful process by which this beautiful deity of Gopal is worshipped. And it's been a long multi-day festival. Each day it's been an Anukut celebration. And we're coming to the close of that pastime. But you've seen how different Kshatriyas, they built up the property of the Lord, they built boundary walls, they provided protection, funds, so many things. And then Madhavendra Puri, as in the next few verses, will empower and invite Brahmanas to worship Gopal so that his worship continues undisturbed. And so that's the typical method by which devotional communities are encouraged. Now, of course, the Gopal deity is no longer there on Govardhan Hill, but he's in Nathdwar, Srinathji. That's where this original Gopal deity is, in Rajasthan. So if you have a chance to go once lockdowns are over, that's another place to visit. Actually see where Gopal has moved. He was in a bush for many years, if you remember, just before this pastime began. Madhavendra Puri excavated him from a bush. And then he was there on top of Govardhan Hill, nicely served. And now he's somewhere else, being nicely served. So the Lord moves, his devotees move. But, as I said at the beginning, he remains fixed. He's the constant reference point within this changing world. And devotion to him is also a constant reference point. So that gives us stability. So I'll stop there. If there are any questions, we have Taruna Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. This last portion you were speaking about, cow protection, farming, self-sustained farms and stuff. Seems to me we have a lack of Shudras and Vaishyas in our society, because I think we already have enough speakers, enough lecturers, enough people who try to inspire things roll. But then our project in our movement is suffering due to lack of people who actually want to make their hands dirty and get out and do the job and inspire others to do. So, I mean, how can we solve this? For me, I don't like the idea when somebody just speaks about, for example, cow protection and never does anything, neither contribution, neither monetary, neither work, and then at the same time stuffing himself with the dairy products. So in that case, I prefer people to be vegans and honest or contribute to cow protection and do something actually substantial, and then it's all right. Otherwise...
Yes. So what I would say is, the first thing, just on a basic principle, be very careful about going down this line of logic. This is a very, very, very dangerous line to go down. And it's actually the point I started off with at the beginning of this class. That, people in general will criticize devotees for not doing so many things. They will say, you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this. But actually, we should consider what each person's job is. What is this person's job and what is this person's job? So what is the job of a preacher? What is the job of a farmer? What is the job of a mercantile man? What is the job of a wealthy, capitalist from Mathura? What is that person's job? What is the job of a doctor? Is it the case that the preacher has to be constantly doing everything that they preach about? It is certainly a fact that a preacher should preach about Krishna and Krishna consciousness based upon realization and based upon practical engagement in devotional service. So yes, it can be quite unsatisfactory when someone is preaching to follow the instructions of the Bhagavatam, but they themselves don't do it. They're just preaching because they heard somewhere they should preach. So it is incorrect that whenever anyone promotes cow protection, to demand that they actually start milking themselves. That is not
sometimes,
fair.
Sometimes.
That is not fair. If the preachers do not promote the idea that people should be doing cow protection, there is no promotion of cow protection. Because we can see that those who are doing the cow protection, that is very good, very essential. But if they're spending 16 hours a day, which is 16 hours of waking time engaged in cow protection, when is the opportunity for them to preach and propagate? Isn't it? They're already fully engaged. They're engaged in their work. It's not a disqualification to be engaged in cow protection, to be engaged in work. We need all sorts of people, actually. The Vaishya community includes a range of people. It includes Krishi, Goraksha, Vaniyam, mercantile persons, persons who protect cows, persons who grow crops. These are all aspects of Vaishya life. And you'll find within that different ones do different aspects of those. So actually a whole nationwide or hopefully worldwide kind of revolution can only happen when people honor that there are multiple commitments to be made by multiple individuals. Now, when Prabhupada went to see wealthy people in their homes, capitalists, as you say, his goal was make them life members. His goal was let them contribute to the society. So Prabhupada would accept their contributions. Prabhupada would preach. Prabhupada would teach his disciples how to do something. Prabhupada would give his disciples programs, projects to build and develop. And then he would teach them how to encourage different devotees to fit inside those projects. Each person did something different. They didn't all do the same things. If Prabhupada stopped preaching, there would be nothing of value that the materialists could contribute. Because any wealth they would contribute would just be part of a business transaction, which would not save them from the cycle of karmic interaction. Unless Prabhupada preached and then engaged that wealth in devotional service, that wealth itself is of no value. So similarly, if we just start another farm and just look after cows, that is not the full picture. But if we start a farm, if we look after cows, if we protect them, we demonstrate to people how it is possible to live in a natural, wholesome, sustainable way by actually valuing cows, and then we work out creatively ways to make the rest of the farming community take up this way of life by demonstrating to them that it is profitable and practical, then that is a great service. So each person has a role to perform. And we should never look at someone else's role and say, why aren't you doing that? As I said, we can always say the opposite. You know, we could say to a person who's working all day, why don't you preach? Just as they look at a person who preaches and say, why don't you work? It's not a line or a direction of argument that ever goes anywhere. So that's a very, very important consideration. But now, so the second point is, and it's more a reflection about our purpose. See, ISKCON as a society, as I think I mentioned in the previous class or the class before, is meant for training brahmanas. Prime goal, train brahmanas. Now, everything else will come along if we have some brahmanas around. If we have some people who actually know scripture, who know Shastra, who know the science of devotion, then they can actually encourage a range of other people. Now, you're saying there are not many Shudras, people willing to do Shudra work. There are so many people. This country has a population of about 55 million, 60 million. The majority of any country is Shudras around the world. There's no shortage of them. What's required is an extensive Krishna conscious propagation so that as many people who have mercantile ability, who have working ability, who have intelligent organizational ability can be guided, encouraged, inspired by the preachers who have Brahminical ability. And they can be inspired to set up these things. So it's not that a person primarily engaged in Brahminical duties has no interest in these other things. But they are not the ones to be doing that because they already have their job description. So yes, it's nice, you know, when we're here at the manor, and certainly I like wandering over to the Goshala and doing something every now and then. It's nice, but it's not the job description. It's not an expectation. It cannot be an expectation any more than I would expect anyone else from another department to come and start doing my service. It's not reasonable. So we have to have a wholesale respect for each and every other person's interaction and contribution. And only then can we actually have respectful progress. Otherwise, we're constantly looking at what someone else isn't doing and not worrying about what we're not doing. Thank you. Prayojan Prabhu?
It was quite interesting to me, what you're relating to speak about there, was the interview with Jiva Patti. Now, if you see that interview and listen to it, you say, well, what's he all about? He's a mysterious person. He did pujari work here. And somehow or other, he ended up on the altar. Now, Bhagadatta asked him a series of questions. And one of them was, he says, why don't you give class? He says, because I'm no good at it. I can't think of what to say. I can maybe say a sequence, of doing things, but I wasn't comfortable. And the Bhagavata tried to say, well, if you practice and you do this and do that, but he wasn't going down that road. No. He says he was very focused, but on what he was good at. And we found out with Jivapati, he was simple, but he was totally dedicated to his service in such a way that he was meticulous to every detail. In other words, he became absorbed in his service. And that took his consciousness completely and utterly, doing what he could do. And I think you're well there. You just have to know what you can do. What is your consciousness? And he was classic at that. It's not a case of encouraging a person to give class if they sweep okay. He can do it, and he can say his realizations, but that's, he can tell us that if you use this broom like this and like this, this, it's okay. And that's his absorption. That's his satisfaction. So he was you don't try and change people in that way. He knew what he could do, and he did it with full consciousness. Amazing interview. Amazing. If you actually see what this person was about and the way he approached things. With great simplicity.
No, thank you. Thank you for that remembrance of Jivapati Prabhu. I certainly, when I'm doing altar service, we definitely miss Jivapati Prabhu. His meticulous preparation of all the items. So it's it's very much missed. He was perfectly focused, and he had the mood of actually doing the needful. So if something wasn't there, he accepted responsibility that my job in this particular service, his service was backup. He used to do backup service. And the morning backup slot. And his point was, okay, everything's meant to have been set up perhaps by a range of different people. I consider it my responsibility to make sure that everything is ready up to the required standard for when the pujaris use those items for serving Krishna. So he would compensate. If there was a defect, if someone had not done something, someone had not put something on a plate, someone had done something backwards, he would just sort it all out. That was his mood. That's very special. It's very rare. And I would love to see a return to that. But he's such an amazing, inspirational person. Thank you for bringing up that important point. That, each person has their own speciality. And it's the dedication with which they do their own role that counts. The dedication. See, it could be a simple service, but how focused, how much do you give your all to it? I mean, Brajan Prabhu won't like me glorifying him, but for many years, quietly, behind the scenes, no big article in newsletter, no WhatsApp messages, nothing. Quietly, in the background, doing his service, day in, day out. Cleaning. Simple, happy devotee. So thank you for that example. These are the examples that have sustained me in my life. The example of quiet, unmotivated service. And so if each one of us can be an example like that to someone else through our genuine performance, not propaganda, performance, through our genuine time-tested, have we stood the test of time? Contribution to Krishna without interruptions, unmotivated, uninterrupted. That's the goal we're working towards. Then each person will be an exemplary person. That's what's appealing in Krishna consciousness. I think one of the ladies had a question. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. That was an excellent class. And it really fits in with I had this kind of, when we went into lockdown, I I was WhatsApping. I was WhatsApping with Suru and Krishna Prabhu. We were making like some arrangements for devotees from Soho Street and the congregation to start to make their gardens into gardens that they can grow food. Then they were all offering little things to Radhalandanishwar. So then when I came out of isolation, then I realized we're not planting anything here. I was like, oh my God, we have to get planting. And then, so we went out and started planting. And so it's been my constant meditation. I wrote to Mother for Shaka Prabhu, and because Jagat Priya said, if you have any anxiety, you can message her. And my anxiety was, well, what about the farm? If people are not getting any food from the supermarket, really we need to make this effort to show an example now here for our congregation outside and everyone. And part of it also was my own anxiety. You know, we're going to starve. You know, but of course, Krishna is always going to take care of us. But always in the back of your mind, just because we have a material body, that material body has those anxieties attached to it. So anyway, then I continued to speak with Guru and Krishna Prabhu, and they're talking about, we were for a long time talking about and fundraising for a project to develop the land at the Ahimsa farm and buy more land. They needed £1 million to buy an extra piece of land, and that still hasn't been bought, but they want to now develop in Kent area because Soho Street is attached to that, you know, that's their area. So we've been having this conversation, and what really struck me was that our congregation have assets, they have houses, and assets that aren't necessarily going to be as useful as, say, we have been programmed to believe. So if there is this collapse of the economy and there's no oil or gas or electricity supplies, then their houses will be empty shells. They'll have no food, they'll have no heating. What will be the use of that type of house? And years ago, I did a straw bale building house. I worked with one lady. He made a huge straw bale classroom for the girl guides. And so I had this understanding about my grandma. I grew up in a cob house, a mud lump house, very tiny cottage made from mud and reeds. And so I have this understanding of this lifestyle. And the other part of my family, they were raising animals for the slaughter. So I have like some experience of this, how the effect of the slaughterhouse mentality and then also this simple living and high thinking. Yeah. So for me, it's been like a constant meditation, and I wanted to somehow or another to use that experience and my experience with the cows. And, you know, I got knocked over by Govinda. He charged me full on, actually.
He's got a list of people.
Yeah, but I wanted to use that, you know, this, what else to do with it, but this, I just had this constant hankering, how can I turn this into something that helps others, and especially the congregation members who are now all isolated. So I wondered if we could do some campaign or something to...
Yeah, you know. We have to always be very careful that we have to make sure that whatever projects and campaigns and programs we do, that they are done correctly with proper thinking. There have been many attempts at farming, cow protection, with devotees' individual contributions, efforts. Some of those have been very whimsical. Some of those have not been with solid substance. If there was devotional enthusiasm, there may not have been competence. If there was competence, there may not have been financial awareness or financial skills that are also required. A farm which is bankrupt, not producing profit, is not a farm. As Prabhupada says, when you're preaching, where are the results? Where are the devotees? If you're just preaching, no person is accepting the path of Krishna consciousness, what are you doing? So Prabhupada said, where's the profit? So if you have a farm and there's no profit, something's wrong. So we need systems, we need individuals who don't just have the devotion, just the enthusiasm, but also have some real competence in all these different areas. And when that comes together, then you can have projects which succeed. So we have to just be very careful that all the pieces of the puzzle are in place, and that each of the piece of the puzzle is actually being developed and grown. Before we start publications, before we start productions, before we start pamphlets, contribute for this scheme, that scheme. Many schemes have shut down. In fact, practically all of the efforts have shut down within this country. because of some insufficiency, lack of whatever I've mentioned. So what we don't need is more campaigns, more projects, which are one person's devotional idea. Rather, what we need is some grounded, real, substantial, evidence-based, profit-generating options which can be demonstrated to be successful, initially on a small scale, just as with Sitaram Prabhu is a Ahimsa project, small scale, start off with a farm, do this, that, grow, expand. That creates credibility. Because the last thing people need is to be contributing to someone's well-meaning but incompetence. So those two things sometimes go together. Well-meaning does not always mean competence. So we have to make sure that projects are like that, projects are conceived like that. You have all the experts involved, experts on all dimensions, not just one aspect. And then when that's there, and then you have a step-by-step process for expanding and growth, and then naturally Krishna will supply. He will definitely supply. It's his desire, ultimately. Prabhupada wanted it. So we just have to play our part. Okay, I think we'll stop there. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.